I'm really grateful for Reverend Denise speaking for us and sharing her insights and her wonderful data collection that is all coming together in this moment. So I would invite everybody else to mute as Reverend Denise unmutes and we hear what she has to share with us today.
Good morning. So, interestingly enough, this chapter called The Power of an Idea, in this book called Ideas of Power, the person that compiled some of these talks that Ernest Holmes did shared that the last chapter and this one were so powerful that that's why he focused on the whole book being called Ideas of Power. And as we know, Ernest Holmes always stressed the power of an idea. He always stressed that thoughts are things, and that if we want to create or have something more in our life, in our heart, in our body, in our mind, that the idea, a thought, can create that if we spend the time embodying and knowing that and feeling that. So I wanted to talk a little bit today about kind of how all comes from God. And how in the beginning he was sharing about the word. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about how to work with that a little bit. And then I'm going to throw in some nuggets of some science. Because the science these days is so amazing and wonderful in kind of proving that what we've always known and believed in the science of mind philosophy is fact. And it's just fun that Ernest Holmes, this was in the late 50s, that he was sharing these ideas and this philosophy and how it's been, what, 70 years or something since then? And science is catching up to the power of an idea. So I'm going to start off with sharing something from the chapter. There is nothing but God. God is infinite intelligence. The word of God, the thought of God, the idea of God is the action of God. As St. Augustine said, it was very evident that the creative word was the contemplation of God. He didn't use crowbars or levers, and every scripture tells us that creation is the result of the contemplation of the self-knowingness of God. That's a mouthful, and there's still more, but I wanted to take a brief pause so you can kind of take that in. Every scripture tells us that creation is the result of the contemplation of the self-knowingness of God. Now, by contemplation, we mean that with which God is identified. For instance, we want to think about peace. It is an idea to begin with. We meditate upon the idea of peace. We get into the idea of peace, a deeper sense of peace. We identify ourselves with peace. I am that which thou art, peace within my soul. Thou art that which I am, infinite peace within me. There is nothing but peace. Now, This is identifying with peace. So that's Ernest Holmes' little bit of humor there on, like, if you really focus on the peace, you're gonna get the peace. So I really have enjoyed this book because of he has a lot of nuggets, and there it was so much in this chapter. Like Connie said in her talk last week, I had eight typed pages just from the stuff that I wanted to, spend time with and maybe share. And I had to narrow that down to, like maybe three things. Otherwise, we'd be here for a month. So the part that I love about that quote is the contemplation. The creative word was the contemplation of God. So creation came about by God or energy or the universe or whatever you want to call it, had the thought, the idea of creation, and it came into manifestation in this world. So, as everything that we see came from that idea, that thought of creation, the contemplation, does that mean we could also experience that divine knowingness, that connection, that we are all that is? He also says, it is our philosophy that if we scrape away the debris, that which contradicts the divine presence, we shall find a divinity concealed in everything, every person, everywhere, all the time. It is our belief that in such degree as we may individually and collectively perceive this divinity, it will appear. I'm going to read that one again. It is our belief that in such degree as we may individually and collectively perceive this divinity, it will appear. Act as though I am, and I will be. I mean, that's just a really powerful statement. And, he talks some about, that if we have thoughts of unhappiness and, then we have thoughts of happiness and then like we're confused. We don't really spend the time. Well, actually, a lot of you as I do as well. But what he's really saying is that the more we spend time allowing ourselves to feel the beauty, see the beauty, hear the beauty, use all the senses, taste the beauty. You can taste a strawberry, and like if you mindfully just pay attention, it's like the flavors burst in your mouth. So by spending time paying attention to those things that we desire, or I have a beautiful Japanese maple right outside my window. I also have a cypress, not cypress, crepe myrtle that a robin has created a nest. And about a week ago, I went out, and she, of course, flew off, freaked out that I came out, And I got my camera and took a picture, and there's two bright, beautiful blue eggs. And I just those simplicity things, it just made my heart expand. And then this past Thursday, I went out and I was like, let me see. I try not to bother them, I'm just curious because she was gone, and I was like, let me see. And I took a picture, and sure enough, there was these two little, bald little birdies that his eyes were still closed, their beak, and but they're just bald, they got little tufts of hair here and there, but just that alone, it just expanded my heart. It made me feel the divine presence. It made me feel connected to the divine presence. So there was another part. Let's see. Here it is. Where he talks about, well, he shares something that Plato says. Plato said everything is made up of divine ideas. This is what he meant, the thoughts of God. In the beginning was the Word. God thought creation into existence and is still thinking it into existence in you and in me. The creative energy and intelligence that speaks the planets into their spheres of rotation and revolution is the same intelligence that digests our food and enables us to read the morning paper. So again, he was focusing on peace, and so he's kind of sharing with us that the more you have those thoughts of peace or have that connection or sit with the idea of peace, then that expands in our consciousness and in our awareness and becomes that which we are. So one of the interesting things is he tells a story about a woman who came to him after she had had some physical issues, and she had blood pressure that was all messed up, and she's telling him about this, and he's like, well, it sounds like you've kind of lost your zest for life. I thought that was interesting because she said that her doctor even said, there's really no reason for you to have this issue. He couldn't find anything that was amiss, And so Ernest continued to ask some questions about, well, what is it? Let me just try to read some of the story here. So she was asking Ernest, what should I do? And he was like, well, what did you do when the doctor, told you this? What did you used to do, in your life? And she said, well, I used to play the piano all the time and was teaching. He was like, well, get out your old piano and begin to play it. She said, well, I couldn't teach anymore. And I said, well, how do you know you can't? She made all kinds of excuses, fingers too stiff, can't play anymore, etc. And he said, you have stopped living, but you've not dropped dead. Another nugget. Life and action are the same thing. It is now known in medicine and accepted that where there is this continued ennui and lack of physical vitality, even when there is no real particular infection or reason for illness. Any doctor will tell you that the illness is because people lack an enthusiastic zest for life. This really spoke to me because many of you know that, my mom passed a couple years ago, going on three. And I mean, I could relate to that, losing that zest for life. And, but then realizing, like, wow, there is still so much here, so much beauty. Like I talked about the baby birds, and it's just amazing that we can get trapped in our own mind, our own world, that hamster wheel that is, all those ideas and thoughts of, how this is not right, or, I can't believe that this is going on, or why is this and that. And it's like, as long as we just stay in this part of our body, just in this part, we're not going to get anywhere. It's just like a hamster wheel. And so this is kind of where he talked about focusing on love when he went and did some talks in Florida, which he said he didn't really want to do, but he didn't know anybody there and that kind of thing. And he was kind of like, what do I do? It's like, I don't know these people, but I'm going to go ahead and do it. And what I'm going to do is just focus on loving them. And he said, I didn't want to go, but I had promised. So I went and spoke in four different cities in Florida. And he said, what can I do for someone that I do not know? And he said there was big crowds and everyone kind of seemed like our people, our people, like enjoy this or resonate and practice this kind of philosophy and way of being. And he said, well, I shall demonstrate to myself that I love these people. God is love, and I love people anyway. It is only my business if love is transmitted. What is everything else? And I did it. Every place I went, strangers came up to me and said, it must be the most wonderful thing in the world to be loved by so many people. And he said, isn't that something? So, how do we use this power of the idea, our thinking? He shared two simple things, really. Focus on peace, embrace peace, say the word peace. Just saying the word peace has a resonance inside your body. It's kind of like the word om, where it vibrates in your heart. And then he talks about love, just focusing on loving. And I had mentioned to, I think it was when it was in Carolyn's week of talks, and I had shared about how I also feel like I've kind of lost my purpose or what my purpose is or whatever. It's like it's my life has evolved, and so in some ways I'm thinking, oh, I've got to come up with some other purpose and blah, blah, blah. So we talked about some of that, and I'm pretty sure, I believe what came out of that was, if you show up and you love, I mean, wow, I got chills just saying that. Like, there is no greater purpose, So if it's a foster child, I just show up and be a loving presence. If it's someone I meet at the store, I smile. I share a laugh. That is plenty of purpose. Really going around loving everybody in the world. And it helps me also realign myself to that which I truly am. And I feel that presence of God, spirit, in my heart, in my mind, in my body, which then it just kind of amps up, And so then it's like even more that I want to give and love and share and be. So I forgot one of the things I wanted to say was based on everything comes from God, right? God, the word into creation, life only comes from life. This is one of the things that the scientists also said that I'll tell you in a minute, but that life comes from life. But in the beginning, God thought creation, all that we see and know and are blown away by, was created in that way. And there's this joke that I just thought was pretty funny. It's called Get Your Own Dirt. Some of you probably have heard it, but I'm going to share it anyway. One day, a group of scientists got together and decided that man had come a long way and no longer needed God. So they picked one scientist to go and tell him that they were done with him. The scientist walked up to God and said, "God, we've decided that we no longer need you. We're to the point that we can clone people and do many miraculous things. So why don't you just go on and do your own thing, mind your own business here?" God listened very patiently and kindly to the man. After the scientist was done talking, God said, "Very well, how about this? Let's say we have a man-making contest." To which the scientist replied, "Okay, we can handle that." "But," God added, "we're going to do this just like I did it back in the old days with Adam." The scientist said, "Sure, no problem." And he bent down and grabbed himself a handful of dirt. God looked at him and said, "Oh, no. You can get your own dirt." Sorry, I love that because this is the moral of the story. It isn't enough just to be able to explain the origin of life. If you cannot explain the raw materials and fine-tuned parameters of chemistry and physics, as Carl Sagan said in Cosmos, to really make an apple pie from scratch, you must begin by creating your own universe. And so scientists have learned how to clone or to create some things, recreate living things, but they have to use the source of something that's already living and has been created by God. So humans have no idea how all the intricacies of all of that, I mean, how do you recreate that? Like your own universe. But the power of an idea is that if you can think it, believe it, embody it, and know it, you can create anything. The universe might not look quite the same as what God has created in this universe. So there was a neuroscientist, well, actually a quantum scientist is who she is, that I managed to watch this past week. And I wish I could, I mean, I could probably share the video with you. It's probably only going to be up for another 24 hours or so because it was from a summit that it's like it's free for a period of time and then they but her name is Dr. Sue Morter and she does quantum science and also what was it bio where did I write that I don't know, bioenergetics. And so one of the first things that she shared, which I'm going to share with you just because I feel like it kind of proves what Ernest is saying, that they were doing this test. And she said, we're studying particles that are smaller than atoms, and the tiniest particles that we know have different characteristics and different behaviors. So we wanted to study and see what is the basic foundation of our reality, and what does quantum science have to say about that? And when they were studying to see if the tiniest particles that they could observe were energy or if they were matter, if they set the equipment to test to see if they were energy, these particles behaved like energy waves. Now, if they set the equipment up to test if the particle of mass was matter, as we've previously known matter, it would behave as matter. And so the answer was yes, it is energy and it is matter. And the answer was yes. And it's this is part of her transcript. And it kind of confused science. And so it was a birthing of a new science called quantum science. And she said it became the forefront of their attention and their curiosity. So these tiny particles we recognize, they actually respond to intention. They respond to intention. That's what quantum science was really seeing, that if the scientists were intending to find this, that's what they found. And if they were intending to find this other thing, that's what they found. So intention is the same as a thought. A thought, an intention maybe has a little bit more meat behind it, like you're really focusing on your intention. And the power of creation comes from what you are intending. So these particles, when they were testing and thinking they're going to be energy, they were. They were thinking they would be matter or mass, they were. So that says, like, this is like photons, very tiny pieces, and we're made up of billions of these things. And so just imagine each cell has its own intelligence. It knows when the baby is being formed. This cell knows it's a heart cell. This cell, I mean, it's just, it's wow. The intelligence, yeah, just blows my mind when I think of just how a baby is created and grows. That's the power of an idea. And as we know, Ernest Holmes always stresses about how we're a choice, you know? And so I'm going to conclude with, oh, here's a good one. Here's another nugget. A ham sandwich can, wait a minute. All science and art and philosophy and wit and theology of man cannot tell you how a ham sandwich can become brains or blood or fingernails. I love that. So, what I want to sum it up is that there is this intelligence, there is this divine, and it does live within us. It is us, it is as us. And the more that we contemplate or set an intention or bask in the beauty around us or sit and just feel the tingling energy and essence in our body. It belongs to everybody. That was one of the other things he said, that he said, I can feel it and I know it, and it is real as this and as solid, and it belongs to everybody. It belongs to everybody. So grab it and go. The conclusion is, you and I are the chosen people of the ages because we choose it. It with a capital I. It chooses us automatically, without fear, believing that we are worthy, but with true humility, as an artist feels humble before the beauty of things, even in the exaltation of his beholding soul. There was a poem that I also wanted to share, but it's after 12, so maybe I'll try to share that in the second part. So get to setting your intentions. Get to creating peace and having your purpose be love. And just know that that divine presence is who you are. That's what it is.